morning to everyone. We'll be starting our class momentarily, taking up the Noahide laws regarding sexual prohibitions. Good morning.
Good morning, Rabbi. How are you?
Good there. How are you today?
Excellent. Thank you. I need to let you know that we have to pick up our son Aaron from camp this morning, so at about 12:15 your time, we're going to have to bail out.
Okay. That should be sufficient time. Okay, we're going to work today from, I want to take up the a piece of the Talmud, see exactly where it is. And it's dealing with sexual laws and prohibitions regarding the Noahide. I believe it's 58a.
Are you with the correct page?
Yeah, Sanhedrin.
Okay,
58A. Wait a moment for you, and then we're also going to take a look at the source that it draws on from Genesis. And that will be... right, it's Genesis 2:20. So those are the two areas we'll work from, so wait till you have that. It was a very enlightening piece of Talmud for me in terms of certain areas that typically have taboo associated to it. That piece of the Talmud there?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, for whoever just came on the line, we're in Sanhedrin 58A. Genesis 20.
Bill.
Morning, Bill.
Good morning. Is this the rabbi?
Yeah. This is Doug, but the rabbi's on the line.
Oh, hey, Doug. I thought you weren't going to be on this this call. I got a thing from Cal saying that you guys are going to be doing something with...
You know, prefer Rabbi Moskowitz's class.
Oh, that was Rabbi Moskowitz's?
Yeah, we need to leave right after this.
Oh, okay.
We will, for those of you on the conference line, at about 9:15 Pacific, we will have to drop off, which will cancel the conference.
Okay, so we're ready to go?
Yes, we are.
Okay. All right, so the Talmud states that it's about a third of the way down. I think somebody has some feedback is coming through the speaker, so it's going to come through the phone back into you. Do you hear that, Doug?
I don't. I'm not picking up anything.
No, nothing? Okay. Maybe it's just my end. Maybe it is my end. Okay. So the Talmud starts about a third of the way down, and it states according to Rabbi Akiva, and it says the time that we learned, therefore man should forsake, he should abandon his father and his mother. And well, let's actually read the verses inside, just so we have the backdrop here. This is Genesis 2:20, and it states as follows: that man had called names to all the animals and to the birds of the heaven and to all the beasts of the field, but to man he did not find a helpmate, meaning a wife. He didn't find a mate. So evidently, there was something missing in the animal kingdom. And there's actually a medrash, which means a homily, that says that Adam had intercourse with all the animals, and he was not satisfied. So that's impossible, of course, but it's trying to point you at something. The next verse, which is 2:21, says that God caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam, and he slept, and he took one of his sides, typically construed as rib, but it means one of his sides. So he took a side of him, actually he took away some flesh or bone, whatever it was, and he closed up the cavity with flesh in its place. And God built that side of Adam that he took from Adam into a woman, and he brought her to Adam. Then Adam said, Adam said, "This time, bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh, to this one will be called woman, because from man she was taken." So in Hebrew it's Isha, and man is Ish. So he's saying Isha is a reference to the man that she was taken from. So we see that Adam is exclaiming a satisfaction that he didn't have up to this point. And he explains the reason is because she is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. Therefore, and now this is the verse that the Talmud launches from. This is 2:24. "Therefore, man should abandon his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they shall be one flesh." Okay, so man should abandon. But the interesting thing here says, therefore. So this is a narrative verse. The question is, what is the therefore? The last thing that Adam said was, this time she is my flesh and bones, and she's called woman, because from man was she taken. Now, because he said that, the Torah comes in and says, therefore man should leave his parents and cleave to his wife, and they should be one flesh. So that term therefore is interesting. It's saying it was a condition that was met, and now there must be a certain result, and that's the abandoning of the parents. So now Rabbi Akiva, back in the Talmud, Rabbi Akiva says, how's the sound, by the way, okay?
Very good.
Okay, good. So Rabbi Akiva says as follows. He says that this verse of therefore man should abandon his father and mother. So Rabbi Elazar says this means the father's sister also is prohibited sexually. So abandoning the father also means any relation of the father, meaning the sister. And emo, the word mother, meaning that since he has to abandon the mother too, so Rabbi Eliezer says that this also refers to the sister of the mother. That means that a man cannot, when it says that he has to abandon his parent, that means it's a prohibition, a Noahide prohibition, that man cannot marry his father's sister or his mother's sister. Okay? Rabbi Akiva says that a man, when it says that a man should abandon his father, father means to say the wife of his father. And I think one view is that it should be even after his father's death, that still she has the status of having been the wife of your father. So even after your father dies, you cannot marry this woman because she eternally retains this status. Okay, and mother just means literally mother, that a person is not allowed to marry his mother. Okay, but you see, I want you to see that this is now being derived from the verses that we just read in Genesis. So we're going to have to make sense out of just the verses and to see how they can now make, there has to be it has to fit into the context. Rabbi Akiva's statements here, Rabbi Elazar's statements have to fit into the context of Genesis. Right, with Adam's finding such satisfaction with Eve and her being bone and of his bones and flesh of his flesh. And then the Torah now saying, therefore, because of that, now man has to abandon his father and mother. And the abandonment would be also including the father, mother, sister, because they also represent the father and mother. And Rabbi Akiva says that mother means literally mother, that this includes a prohibition not to marry your mother. Then it goes on and it says, what's the next statement in the Torah? The next statement of the Torah, I'm still in the Talmud. The Talmud now quotes the next word, which says, and he should cleave to his wife. So the Talmud says, v'davak, that he should cleave. This means not with a male, meaning homosexuality is prohibited. And the commentaries say the reasoning is that what does cleave mean? Cleave means when both partners enjoy the sexual activity equally. But in a homosexual relationship, only one partner at a time is experiencing orgasm. So the actual satisfaction is only from one partner. So since it says v'davak, that you should cleave, and the rabbis interpret cleave mean that both partners are involved in the enjoyment equally, so that can only be a man and woman together. Okay, and therefore that excludes homosexual relations. Then it says v'ishto, that he should cleave to his wife. What does his wife come to teach? Meaning they're taking every word of this verse and getting another derived law regarding Noahide law from here. So v'ishto, with his wife, he should cleave to his wife, and the derivation is, and not the wife of his friend. So if the Torah is telling us, and therefore a man should leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, so cleaving means it has to be a heterosexual relationship. His wife means to exclude anybody else's wife. Okay? And the last thing that this Talmudic portion takes up is, and they should be one flesh. That's the end of verse 24. So that means to say that it rules out bestiality, which cannot produce any type of flesh. There's no offspring that can come from a man and animal. Okay. And that's what the Talmud says. The Talmud says, and they should be one flesh. Mi shenasim basar echad. With what can man, with that man can create one flesh. Yetsu behemo, which excludes animals and beasts, because they cannot create flesh from that union. They cannot create one flesh, meaning a unified flesh cannot come about from man and beast. Okay. All right, so that's really it from the Talmud. The question, again, that I want to start with is, what is this concept of therefore? Since man was so, he exclaimed his satisfaction this time, meaning now he finally found something which gave him this satisfaction, and that was the woman. Because she was taken from his bones and from his flesh, this gave him a great satisfaction, and he even called her after his own name. And then the Torah now comes and narrates and says, therefore, because of this, man should abandon his parents and cleave to his wife and be one flesh. So I'll now listen to what you have to say, because it's just a very, you know, it seems to be a pretty, you know, clear question. And it seems to be a little bit unrelated as to what this leaving, what do the parents have to do? And, I mean, God knew from the outset, of course, that he had to take the flesh. He knew that this was a necessary means of creating a union that would be satisfaction, that would give satisfaction to Adam. I guess there's a number of things here, and I'll pause here and let you think about it, and then see if you have any thoughts on it. If the question is not clear, you know, please also tell me that. And let me just say hi to Rizora and JHS. I think that's Netherlands. They just joined us online. All right, so the question again is, we're in Genesis 2, 23 and 24, verses 23 and 24, that man did not find any mate in the animal kingdom. God, therefore, put a sleep on man, created the woman. Evidently, it had to come from his body. That was necessary. And from Adam's response, that he says, this time, bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh, now this one will be called wife. This one will be my partner, because she was taken from man. Interesting, he doesn't say that she was taken from me. He just says an objective statement, that she was taken from man. Meaning it has that nature. She has that characteristic, which satisfies him. And because of that, man must now abandon his parents. And the Talmud says, what does it mean, abandoning his parents? Meaning he abandons them in terms of sexual partners. Up to this point, it didn't seem to be there was any abandonment. And of course, you'll ask, well, Adam and Eve, neither one had parents. So how does this apply? So we have no shortage of questions. And it is quite interesting. But they derive from here. Therefore, because of this event of God creating the woman from man and his identification with her, therefore, he must abandon his parents as being sexual partners, and also, as the Talmud derives, even the sister of the parents he cannot come close to. So we just want to understand the statement, therefore. What's the therefore? That's the question. Okay.
Rabbi, is it possible, is it clear, I realize the Talmud is saying that a person cannot have relations with his father or his mother and so forth, but is the Talmud very clear that that is what the therefore is about? That it's about sexuality, as opposed to, could it be that what this is establishing is the blueprint for when a person gets to be of age, they break off and start their own family and build that up with children independent of their father and their mother?
It seems clear to me that it says openly, the Talmud, I'll read it again. It says that let's see the front. Yeah, they're including who the sexual partners can be. Meaning they're excluding who they can't be. Yeah, there's no question. This is talking about, it's not talking about a lifestyle. You could say that based on the, if you want to, comment, give your own commentary on the verses of the Torah. That could possibly work, but the Talmud is clearly talking about the prohibitions of sexual partners, and they cannot be your aunt from either your father or your mother, and they cannot be your mother. And that's derived from leaving, therefore a man should leave his father and mother. And they're getting it from this case where Adam was, a part of him was created by God into his wife, and therefore this now created some change and demanded that he not look at the parent as being partners at this point. What I find very interesting about all this is that the typical taboos that we're raised with are now not even entering the picture. Meaning there had to be something commanded to teach a person that he should not marry his mother. Otherwise, it would be something which the mind would entertain. And I'll tell you something very startling, and that is the Talmud in the tractate Brachot. So in the ninth chapter, I think it's 57a, I was just working on it this past week, so I remember the page. And it states there that if a person has a dream of having intercourse with his mother or his sister, so it says, respectively, he should anticipate wisdom and understanding, meaning it's a good sign. If a person has a dream of having intercourse with his mother or his sister, so he should anticipate wisdom and understanding. What does that mean? I mean, it's saying that the person is now going to start uncovering great new insights in his life if he has dreams like this. Why is that?
Possible because I'm not sure about the sister connection, but the mother is kind of the source of nurturing and learning at a young age for him, so if he has a desire to be intimately connected with that, then that's demonstrating a desire to be intimately connected with wisdom and understanding.
Right, good, I like that, nice answer. But I think there's a greater insight, and actually these are taken from King Solomon. He says, like for example, by the sister, it says, say to wisdom, you are my sister. So that's a statement, I believe, from Proverbs. And they take that to mean that the derivation, that if you have a dream about intercourse with your sister, so it's you should anticipate wisdom. So this is not just a statement. In fact, they're actually basing it on words of that were prophetically inspired. But I think what it's saying is that, see, a person typically won't have a dream about intercourse with his mother and his sister. Why not?
Probably because it's societally considered taboo.
Right, exactly. So it's something which he is now succumbing to external stimulus. But without that external stimulus, we can deduce that he would have dreams like this. Because psychologically, the sister and the mother are the first female individuals that he experiences. And naturally, there are sexual tendencies. So they're going to be expressed. Freud talks about the Oedipus complex, how the child desires the mother and wants the father out of the picture so he can have the mother for himself. And then there's the Electra complex, which is the inverse relationship, where the daughter wants the father and wants the mother out of the picture. And that's simply because sexual desires exist, and they attach at some point to the first objects of the opposite gender in a regular, healthy child. Of course, they're repressed because you feel threatened. So boys, when they're like 7 or 8, they hate girls, and until it hits puberty or 13 or 14, and then their desires start coming out, and now they look for replacement figures for the parents of the opposite sex. So it's a very natural thing, and that's what I think the Talmud is saying when it says that if a person has a dream of intercourse with his mother or his sister, it's something that he should now recognize as a good. He should anticipate wisdom. What do you mean anticipate wisdom? It means that he does not succumb to these type of taboos. His mind is more free than other people. Oh, if the person's mind is more free than other people, he's going to see wisdom. So it's a very 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 clean and explanation that really makes sense. It fits right in with the phenomena. And that's exactly what the rabbis are saying, that if a person does not have these societal repressions, that means to say his mind is less crippled than somebody else. So naturally, a freer mind will see greater wisdom and understanding. Okay. Now, that being the case, you see very well why the Talmud, the Torah itself says that there has to be an injunction over here that a man should leave his parents. Because there is the tendency in a natural individual to have attraction to the parent of the opposite sex, and even to the sister of the father, the sister of the mother. So there is that desire, that relationship is there. But now we have to understand, why did all of a sudden it become prohibited? What were the events that led up to it? It was the creation of Eve. And Adam's response, that bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh, this one is called woman because she was taken from man. Oh, then the Torah comes in and says, therefore a man should leave his father and mother. Let's see if now we're a little bit closer to explaining what do you mean, therefore.
I mean then that since there is now a more, I guess the term would be well-fitting or well-matched partner for me, therefore I would leave these other partners and cleave only to this one.
Well, what demands this one to the exclusion of the others? We're looking for an answer that would say that now, because of this, because of X, this excludes Y. How does Eve, this whole event, his response, that she's taken from his body, and his response to this whole event, demand an exclusion now to the parents? Why is the relationship with Eve mutually exclusive to the parents?
Would it have to do with establishing your own lineage?
Establishing your own lineage. I don't see that from here. I don't see grounds to say that.
Well, it seems kind of strange if you would establish your offspring from your mother or your father.
Yeah, I mean, it's true, I just don't see it from the words. I would say that what you're saying is, there was another question that I had that I didn't say it yet, but you just gave an answer to me. That is that in the sexual prohibitions which the Jew has, and that comes from the Achrimas, the Parsha, later on after the Torah was given, because this is before the Torah was given, so this is a Noahide injunction. I was discussing with my friend Heshy Roth over Shabbos, and he mentioned, he was right, that the Jewish prohibitions come from, you know, Sinai. And there, it lists all the relations that you can't have, mother, father, your sister, or so on, but it leaves out one. It leaves out daughter. So the rabbis in the Talmud say it's derived from granddaughter, because granddaughter is specified expressly in the verse as being a... one of the people that you cannot marry, and whether it's your granddaughter of your son, or the granddaughter that comes from your daughter. And the reason it gives is because it's considered your own nakedness. For example, if you're with your father's wife, you can't come close because then you're revealing your father's nakedness. This was a woman that your father slept with. So by having intercourse with her is, in essence, unveiling some nakedness quality of your father. Your father and your real mother, so if you draw close, so there the problem is that it's your mother's nakedness that you're not allowed to reveal. But when it comes to the granddaughter, it says it's your own nakedness. Perhaps, like you're saying, that you're really not accomplishing anything in terms of lineage. Maybe that's what it's trying to say. You're not doing anything. You're having intercourse with your own lineage, so you're not creating anything new. So it could be like what you're saying. But I don't see that over here in terms of, you know, it's just a side point, but I thought I'd bring it up. But it is interesting that the daughter is not mentioned at all. Maybe for another reason, too, that perhaps that's just so obvious that the daughter is your lineage. So to procreate with your lineage is a redundancy. It's not doing anything. So the Torah will not put in that case. With your very first generation that comes from your own seed, then the Torah doesn't say, not because it's permitted, but because it's so obvious that this is not going to be considered anything more. You're not doing more. This is your daughter. So to have intercourse with your daughter is not going to, it's the wrong approach. It's the wrong approach. It's not creating the generation. It's sort of like a redundancy. Okay, but back to over here. What's the mutual exclusive nature over here that once Eve was created from Adam, therefore it now excluded his parents as being partners? And the answer is in the very words of the verses too. Okay, now Rosario had a couple of comments here. Let me just take a look. Is this prohibition referring also to a woman towards her father and brother? Yeah, towards the father, because the father can't take the daughter either. We'll have to take a look and see if it's dealing with the brother too, but my understanding is yes. Because sex became a way to procreate and start a family. Okay, there could be a reason, Rosario. And your last comment is, if having children with a mother or father, it will create conflict relations and will blur different roles. That's also true as well. What the Rezor is saying is also true, that in the Ten Commandments, which again are according to Rev Sadia Gaon, are the 10 head categories for all the rest of the 603 remaining laws. So in the Ten Commands, we know that they're broken up into two sets of five. The first five are laws between man and God, the second between man and man. So we find it curious why the law about honoring parents, we think that would be between laws of man and man. Parents are people. But why does God place the laws of honoring parents in the first set, which are the laws between man and God? So we explained a number of times that honoring parents really targets a greater objective, and that is that by being created as infants and having parents, we learn the concept of authority, which should then ultimately be transferred onto God. But we have to learn the concept of authority first in order that it paves the way towards accepting God as authority. So therefore, it's placed, the law of honoring parents is placed, rightly so, in the first tables of stone, which deals with the laws between man and God. Because honoring parents, the objective is to really gain a recognition of God's absolute authority and honoring Him. So it's true that by, it could be like Rezor was saying, that in terms of if a man will have intercourse with the wife of his father, now it belittles in his mind, to some extent, maybe a great extent, the image of authority that his father is to hold in his mind. And if he starts blurring those lines of authority, that mars his relationship with God as well. Because then he feels that he can now fill the shoes of his father. He's taking the same woman that his father did. So to a very large extent, there's going to be an identification with the father, when really the father has to retain an authoritative role. But I think there's more here in terms of the verse. Take a look at the verse 23 carefully. If you had to isolate what's going on in Adam's mind right now, what would be the one thing you could say is going on? What psychological phenomenon is this?
He's reflecting, isn't he?
Yes, he's reflecting. But reflection applies to many cases. What's the outcome?
He's deriving a conclusion.
Yeah, what conclusion?
The conclusion that there's something unique about this new creation called woman.
Okay, let me ask you another way. What is he saying twice, although in different words? What sentiment is he expressing twice?
Well, he says, bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. So he's saying this woman is, you know, taken from me or part of me, so right. To speak.
So it's really three times, I'm sorry. Right.
Because of the last phrase in the verse.
Right. See, what he's expressing here is a phenomenon. It's a psychological phenomenon. What is he gaining here that he didn't have before? And JHS on screen is saying oneness. Okay, that's true. There's another way to say oneness, though. And you're right, JHS, because at the end of 24 it says, and they shall be one flesh. So God is saying they shall be one flesh. True.
Is it unity?
There's unity. I would just say there's a different word for unity, identity. He's identifying with the woman. That was missing with all the animals. He did not see any type of identification, meaning part of himself. You see what he's saying? She's from me. That was a necessary element in terms of the relationship of a man and a woman, is that the man requires an identification with the woman. And of course, how do we have that today? Because our wives don't come from us. But psychologically, we look at them and we identify with them. There's something there, reminds us of our mother, or we see that, like a psychologist once mentioned, that when a man is dating a woman and then she starts to be attracted to him, he finds that attraction attracting. He likes that because now he sees in her that she values him. It bolsters his ego. When she is attracted to him and he sees it, that now gives him a greater sense of self, because somebody is now basically saying that he's got value. The woman is saying that she likes him, she's attracted, she loves him. So that makes the man feel his ego is now more robust. There's a satisfaction there. So we get it in a different way, but Adam had it in a very literal way, that she came from him. So this was necessary. It came from him. But coming from him, what that does is an interesting thing. It now gives him a feeling of mastery to a certain extent. And it's interesting that the Talmud, when it talks about a husband, it calls him a Baal, which means owner. So it doesn't mean he owns his wife, but it means he owns certain rights of his wife. He has rights to be with her sexually, where other men don't. So, but there is that domination. There is that feeling of dominance. Now that that exists, and he's and you see that's what Adam explains. She comes from me. She's part of me. But clearly, the part is something in his mind which is not the whole. Together they become the whole, but it's still a part of him. He sees her as being part of him. So he is basically, there's a feeling of a certain dominance. Now maybe you can ask my original question. What's the therefore?
Because I now identify with this woman in a way that I cannot identify with my parents, I'll leave my parents and cleave to her.
Right, but we're saying that there's a dominance going on here. Meaning that she's coming from my bones and from my flesh. It's part of me. So in a certain way, he begot her. And he was there first. It seems to me that what now has to be is that since there's a dominance, and that's what's necessary for man's satisfaction in a relationship, therefore he must abandon the opposite relationship, which is subservience. That's the parents. So that's what I think is really the what's behind the sexual prohibitions. The parents. And that is because since it's necessary for man to have a certain feeling of dominance, so to go after the parents or the parents' sisters, for whatever psychological reasons, that he's still infantile and he needs the parents, whatever the need is, nonetheless, it's fighting the real satisfaction he can only get when he's a dominant role. You are, by definition, subservient to your parent. They created you. So your very existence is due to them. But then also they raised you and they fed you and they carried you and all this. It just permeates your whole being with a sense of subservience to your parent. And since that is not the satisfaction that man got, man expressed openly a satisfaction was from the woman that came from him. So now, therefore, he has to abandon the father and mother. Meaning you can't be both a dominant role and a subservient role in life. If you really want to have the true relationship that's going to be satisfying, so then you must abandon a relationship where you are subservient, because that's not going to satisfy you. That's what I think the therefore is. Since there was a great satisfaction with the woman that came from him, and he was there first, and she came from him, and therefore there was a certain dominance, and that is what gave him satisfaction. So since that's where it comes from, you should abandon seeking out partners that are not going to give that, and actually offer the opposite feeling, meaning where they're dominating you. That's what I believe the therefore is. Tell me if I'm saying it clear enough here.
Very good. And I think it's very clear.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah, it bothered me for a while when I saw this, I was just going through the Gemara, the Talmud, and therefore, what's this word therefore doing there? And then it struck me as being, oh, it seems to be that it's mutually exclusive, because once there's this emotion, and that's the necessary one, and that's the good, because God initiated this whole plan to take the woman from him. God knew this was necessary. So this is how man is made and how woman is made, and this is how the right relationship will be, the greatest happiness. Therefore, you can't go against and go do an opposite type of relationship. As well, we derive from this verse that you cannot be involved in homosexual relations, right? V'davak, that you should cleave to your wife. Cleaving, the Gemara says, is only with one that will have the same satisfaction in the sexual act as you. That can only be a man and woman. and then there'll be Basar Echad. Again, it has to be your own wife. You can't take somebody else's wife. But then you will be one flesh, meaning there'll be this identity. And again, the Talmud learns out, Basar Echad, you know, one flesh means your partner can only be that which can produce a unified flesh. So it can't be bestiality. It can't be with animals. But evidently, there's that emotion there. There is a certain identification man has with animals. You don't have a prohibition in the Torah unless there's a need to have the prohibition. So what it does is that it completely takes a different course than what people would typically say about intercourse with one's mother or one's sister or a father's sister. It's telling you a very clear concept. There's no taboo over here. As a matter of fact, the Talmud talks about a case of taboo, again involving Eve, and there's a homiletic statement the rabbis make that Eve and the snake were having a conversation, and the snake was very clever, and he says that, are you prohibited from eating all the fruits of the garden? So why does it start off that way? Because what he wants to do is he wants to couch the prohibition of the single forbidden fruit as being, it's nothing. He wants to get her to violate it. So if he says, are you prohibited to eat everything? So now in Eve's mind, no, it's only one thing. It's a very small prohibition. So you see, his first maneuver was to belittle the whole prohibition. It's not everything in the garden that you can't eat. So she answers, no, it's only one thing. And then she says, we can't eat them, we can't touch it. Now, God never said, don't touch the fruit. God only said, don't eat it. So then the homily says that the snake pushed Eve into the fruit, and when she saw after she touched it that nothing happened, so then she ate it, and that's when the downfall came. But the rabbis say that since whoever adds detracts, that's literally what the rabbis say, call a Mosef Goreya, whoever adds detracts, what does that mean? It means that since Eve added on to the prohibition, and she says we can't even touch the fruit, that caused her downfall. So it detracted from her status. Since she added, she really detracted from the severity of the crime and from her whole state of being. She detracted because she added on something that was not to be added on. So that's why the Torah says, in a number of cases, don't add to the Torah, don't subtract to the Torah. It's an exact formulation. God knows exactly what we need. Don't add, don't detract. Okay. All right, so she sees an interesting thing, that the Torah does not go with the root of being like adding on these taboos. It's telling you straight that there is this phenomenon psychologically. There are attractions. However, the way man is designed, it's necessary that he follows a dominant role and not the subservient one. Therefore, he has to leave that the parents as being objects. So again, the rabbis in the Gemara and the Talmud that are deriving from this verse that Noachites cannot marry their mother or the father's wife or the mother's the father's sister or the mother's sister. They're deriving this all, and it has to be, you know, viewed in the context of these events. So they must be saying that. I think it's just, you know, if you just follow step by step very clear, you have to come to this conclusion. Because this verse is now as a response to his identification with the woman. It's only due to that identification that now they say these prohibitions come about. All right. All right, any questions or comments?
Rabbi?
Yes.
Can you talk about this dominance? How does that work? I'm looking at the commentary here on 22 when it says the side into a woman. Unlike man, the woman's body was not taken from the earth. God built one side of a man into woman so that the single human being became two, thereby demonstrating irrefutably the equality of man and woman.
Right.
Oh, So man was not meant to dominate woman, but can you go into a little more detail about this dominance in relationship?
No, I mean, there is definitely a dominance that comes up later on, too, when it says after the sin, it says that to your husband you shall cleave, and unto him shall be your desire. That means a woman typically will not have the brazenness to demand sex from her husband. So there's going to be a certain amount of subservience, but only because she dominated him in giving him the fruit to eat. So because of that, let's see who that is. Elisha, right. It's Genesis 3:16. So when God is meeting out the punishments for Adam, Eve, and the snake, so to the woman he says, you will have excessive pain in your pregnancy and your giving birth, and in pain you will give forth children, and to your husband will be your desire, and he will rule over you. So my understanding has always been there that since there was a certain amount of dominance that she expressed over him, and you still see this today, there are husbands and wives where the relationship is that the wife wears the pants, and you see that this capacity is there, but in general, God had diminished to a certain degree that quality of the woman that caused her to push her husband into sin. That was necessary for the good of both man and woman. Right, because she's the one that beguiled him. But in terms of what we're talking about, the dominance does not mean pushing her around or forcing her hand in life. It means that he feels, there's a satisfaction in feeling that she came from him. That he is, in a certain sense, was there first. There's also the fact that a man feels when he chases after a woman and he gets her, he conquers her. So the Talmud also talks about that. It says it's the way of the man to chase after the woman, not the reverse. Because that is a feeling of conquering, the ambition, the emotion that man has. You see, the men typically are the ones that want to build great empires, big businesses, and the women are more realistic. And I remember Rabbi Chait once talking about the wife saying to the husband that, isn't it enough yet? Didn't you build enough yet? Meaning, and the Talmud says that wise men are equated to women. So Rabbi Chait explained, what does it mean that wise men are equated to women? It means that they are not following a typical route of the man that's always looking to conquer and conquer the world and make more money and build empires. The wise man recognizes that this world is temporary. And the woman has that sense too, because she's also not, she's not built, I would say, with that level of accomplishment. Although you do see that there are certain women, like Hillary Clinton, that want to get out there, they want to take over the world, so that it exists in everyone, but typically in a lesser degree. So perhaps that satisfied Adam then. He knew that this came from his body. There was a certain sense of satisfaction, of conquering involved over here. But not anything in terms of forcing her lifestyle, what she has to do, that's completely up to her. But the dominance just seems to be, there has to be. See, again, what I was saying, that a man who chases after a woman and gets her, he's going to be much more satisfied with her than, let's say, a woman who's constantly chasing after the man. Typically, a guy who's getting chased by a girl, he doesn't want to hear from her. It's like an easy win. So that's not something which satisfies. There's a need in man, for whatever it is, whatever the reasoning is, there's that need to have that sense where he worked at it, he got it. All right?
But is this implying then that wasn't in place before Eve ate the fruit?
No, I would say the psychological faculties were all there, but he just didn't have the satisfaction yet. And maybe she just didn't have the opportunity to express her dominance yet, but now she had this fruit, and like the Medrash says that she didn't want to die, and Adam would marry another woman. So you see, even she had jealousy. They give the reasoning, why did Eve give Adam the fruit? Because she felt if she eats, then she's going to die, because God says whoever eats is going to die. So she was jealous that Adam would be around with another woman. So that's what she gave him also. So jealousy was there as well. I would say everything was intact. All the psychological capacities were intact at that point. There were just a few changes that were made afterwards. For example, like the conscience. They were naked at this point and had no embarrassment because there was no, conscience. And let me see, Rosora has a question online. She's saying, however, sex is a little part of a couple relation, of a couple's relationship, which is based on creation of a new family and close relatives. Okay. If we observe God's creation, we realize that children of couples, which are close relatives, have more probability of birth defects. It is somehow God's punishment. I'm not sure if that is the case, but actually my friend Howie was telling me yesterday, he was reading a commentary, that one of the rabbis actually said that it would be good if families married each other, siblings. And they want to prove it from the case of the three greatest people ever to live, was Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. They were all siblings. They came from Amram, who married his aunt, Yocheved. So they want to say, you see how Amram, who married his aunt, and this is before the Torah, so they had, their offspring were fantastic children. So in terms of birth defects, it doesn't seem to be. I mean, Moses, Aaron, and Miriam came from a union between a man and his aunt. But evidently what it's saying over here, I'm just making one step, and that is that in terms of the dominance factor, therefore going after the parent would be contrary. That's all I'm saying here. And the other rabbis, they do speak also. I believe the Rambam, Maimonides, he says that if a person was permitted to have everybody in his family, so they'd be constantly involved in intercourse, because you have the female members and the male members of your family around all day long. So you'd constantly be involved every hour of the day. So by prohibiting the family members, it now removed the person from being so engaged in sex. Okay, any other questions or comments? Looks like we got about 7 minutes or so before we got to sign off, right? You see that verse 23 is really, spells out exactly what's going on. Three times, bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh, because from woman she was taken. So you see, that's really what was being expressed. She came from me. I mean, there's a part of me in her. When I look at her, I identify. And that's probably a very proud type of a feeling. He identifies as part of him in her. And he enjoys that. He enjoys seeing a reflection of himself in the woman. Maybe I'm responsible. Maybe that's really how the dominance is really a better word, Cal. So instead of dominance, maybe he felt a responsibility, and that gave him satisfaction. But it's not dominance in any way of taking away her free will or forcing her to do anything. That is not that's not here at all. As a matter of fact, it was the woman that was dominating the man, and therefore God had to say that your desire is going to be to him. And what exactly did the commentary say on that? That he will rule over you. Why was that the proper response from God, that he will rule over you? All right, everything's going to be for him and not from you, Rashi says. Right, and he says also, to your husband you will desire, meaning in terms of intercourse. Your desire will be to him, but even so, you will not have the brazenness to verbally request it from him. But he will be the one that decides when and where. That's Rashi. Okay, but that makes sense, because that corrects the error that she expressed in giving him to eat. She was directing him towards a sin. And you see that when God says to Adam, what's his punishment? He says the first words, this is 3:17. And to man, God said, because you listened to your wife. You see, he isolates the fact right away that you succumbed to her. All right. Okay. Any other questions? All right, then. So I guess what we'll do is we'll pick up next week. Are you going to be around? We're on?
Yes, that should work.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then. So I wish you a good week. And we'll pick up next week.
Okay. Thanks, Rabbi. This was very, very interesting.
Enjoy. Have a great week.
Appreciate it. You too. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so that wraps up today's class. So we'll put the whole thing online shortly. So if you missed any part, you'll be able to hear it. And we'll pick up again next week, same time, 11:15 U.S. Eastern Time. All right, a good week to everybody.